Good morning. It's good to see each of you. Welcome again to everyone online and in person, each visitor. We're glad you're here. Our theme today is what it means to stand firm, and our intent is for God to equip us to live in specific ways for these present moments that we are facing. And I'm excited about this. Now, to make sense of what's coming, you need to understand some context. I'm going to share with you some things that were happening in the church at Thessaloniki. Paul and his friends had started the church, and they had to leave there because of riots and opposition. And Paul writes this letter, likely one of the oldest that we have in the New Testament, to the church there, and he's commending them for their growing in Christ. And he's also writing to correct some misunderstandings. I will name some things that were happening in the church and in the world, and your job is to think which ones are happening in our world today. Okay? Rumors. Lies. Greed. Poverty. Suffering. Confusion, disagreements. How many of those do we have today? Now, there's one thing that was happening then that I don't think we have right now, and it's a big reason why Paul wrote this letter. There were people in the church of that day saying that Jesus' second coming, Jesus' return, had already happened, and more than that, they attribute those words to Paul. They're gaslighting him, saying that he's the one who said it, that Jesus' return had already come. And Paul says, they're deceiving you. Stick to what I actually said and how I lived. Similarly, we have one, maybe two things happening now that we don't hear about happening then. And it's part of the reason why I'm preaching this sermon. Many of us today get stuck in thinking that we are victims. And I want to say that that comes from our culture, but that in itself may be victim thinking. For far too long, I wasted precious years of my life in this. I blamed other people for my circumstances. I wanted other people to change. Life works opposite. That. Think for a moment, in what ways do we live as though we are victims? What might the gospel say to us about that? Well, this passage is going to show us. Now, the other problem that we have today that the church in Thessaloniki didn't have is Mennonite exceptionalism. Maybe you know of this term. Mennonite exceptionalism is the belief that we are superior because of our actions, because of our higher thinking. Maybe it's our values, like being pacifist or seeking to live simply. And today, some are working to repair the harms of Mennonites in the early 20th century who traveled to Oklahoma as a mission to people who are indigenous North Americans. And some of the good news that they shared turned out to be bad news. Their way of dress had to conform to that of the Mennonites. Their traditions were shared without their consent and exploited. Today, there are Mennonites seeking to repair our harms of Nazi Germany, when roughly 40% of Mennonites abstained from involvement in the war, and roughly 40% did participate in the war, and roughly 14% wore the uniform but refused to bear arms. How then do we live when war and evil press in, and we Mennonites still get trapped up in our thinking that our ways are superior, or that we are victims? Maybe God can be our answer. So let's switch gears. some Zion leaders have invited me to be more explicit about Zion's vision. Now, vision is a part of my job description, congregational vision, and it's part of the job description of our congregational leadership team. And we've been working at this slowly over the last year, and we hope to continue to do so more explicitly. Here is what I can tell you about congregational vision so far, based on what God has already been doing in Zion the last 5-6 years. When Elwood Yoder preached recently, he mentioned seeking to have Jesus at the center of our lives. Think about what else we sometimes put at the center of our lives. You can put anything here. You can put money or our children or ourselves or any of our pet projects. And recently, some young adults and I were talking about this, how if you put anything else in the middle of our lives, Jesus gets moved to the side. So if we put Christian nationalism at the center of our lives, Jesus is going to get pushed to the sides. If we put social justice at the center of our lives, Jesus gets moved to the side. Anything else at the center of our lives becomes a god to us. And we seek to follow Jesus here in this place. So Jesus is to be at the center of our lives. Now, three of the ways God has been working at Zion recently, we have people who are growing in their relationship with God. And we have people who are growing in honoring one another. And we are growing in our outreach. Now, there are lots of intersections here between these different relationships as all of these are growing together. But at the risk of not growing in Mennonite exceptionalism, this passage says it's by the Spirit and by grace. Keep this in mind as we think about standing firm for our context today. As we think about God's vision for us as a church, this is going to give us clues to know what God is already doing. This is not the only things God is doing. These are three categories of things God is doing. Now, first, I want to teach us about standing firm. And I think you're going to have fun with this. I was going to get a slide for it. I didn't quite have enough time. But we mistakenly think that standing firm is about being rigid, about being like the London Guard. I don't know if you've seen pictures of them in their bright red uniforms and the big, tall black hats. And the game is that tourists, when they go, try to make them laugh or do silly things so that they break their focus. We think standing firm is about being focused and planted and rigid. I don't think that's what standing firm in this context that Paul's thinking about. I don't think that's what standing firm really means. I think it would be better to borrow the name of an amazing local band, Walking Roots, that has roots that grow down deep to the water, Psalm 1, and yet moves. When Paul said stand firm, I don't think he meant it literally. Like, that would be odd if he just wants the church to just stand firm, right? He meant something spiritually. He meant stand firm on the inside. And we can get mixed up here because we are passionate about what we have experienced and what we know and what we believe. And so we force others to try to live like we do. I don't think that's standing firm. That would be like saying, well, men have been in power for such a long time and they've taken away women's voices. And so now women are going to have our day. That doesn't sound like good news, right? So let me try to show you. Karen, if you will come forward to help me with this part. I asked Karen for help ahead of time, but Karen doesn't know what she's going to be doing. But she trusts me, and I seek to be worthy of that trust. So we're going to start right over here, if you'll come right over here. And let's back up a little bit. And we're going to go right about to where that first pew is, the short one. Okay? Let's see how many paces it is. Okay? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. What's half of 6?
3.
Let's go to the middle. 1, 2, 3. Good. Now, face this way. Very good. You're doing great. You're doing great. You're looking at me like you have no idea what you're doing. Yes. Okay, let's try this. Put your hands up. Very good. Oh, you are very strong. Yes. Yes. Let's try it one more time. Wonderful, wonderful. Now, when I walked with Karen across the side, what did she do? She didn't know what she was doing at all, right? But she partnered with me as we walked along. The second I put my hands up, and she puts her hands up too, what did she do? Yes, you pushed back. Yes. Yes. Thank you, Karen. Round of applause for Karen. Standing firm is not about pushing. Standing firm is about partnership. And that's true no matter which point of the triangle you're looking at, because these are all about relationships. All right, in a minute, I'm going to need a couple more volunteers. I'd love to have about 4 or 5 people from various age groups who can come forward when I invite you. So get ready. Because Paul tells the people of the church to stand firm to his teachings, because people have impostered what he said, we get confused into thinking we need to stand firm to a particular doctrine, a particular set of beliefs, a particular theology, a belief about God, whether it's this or whether it's that. As smart as Paul was, I don't think Paul wanted people to cling to his teaching. I think Paul wanted people to cling to Jesus. If Paul puts his teaching at the center of his life, his own teaching, it becomes an idol. Brilliant minds have been debating theology for centuries. If I claim to understand every theology correctly, then I do not understand the theology of humility. Some of us may think that the work of theology is for stuffy, boring academics to try to figure out. And others of us may equate what we believe as being our salvation. And too often the way that goes is we say, if your theology, what you believe about God, doesn't match my theology, then you're wrong and you're unsaved and we have to be separate. That's not the gospel either. Because all of these other things crowd out Jesus from being the center of our lives. Because we are pushing instead of partnering, and because of Mennonite exceptionalism, all of these, we are losing our grasp on the gospel. I want to give us a visual for this problem. So if I could have 4 to 5 volunteers who trust me enough to come forward, and you can stand along, let's say, the bottom step. And I'm going to get a drink of water while you do that. Come on forward. Thank you, Laura and Sarah. And up on the bottom step will be great. Thank you, Julia. Bottom step. Thank you, Luke. Come right over here. Very good. Now, if you're hungry and you need a snack, you can take two. But otherwise, take one. There you go. Ooh, that's okay. It's okay. No problem. No problem. All right, Levi. Good.
Like all their Pringles involved.
Yes. Smart. You don't want any? No, good. That's fine. You don't have to.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, now what I want you to do is take the chip and put it on one of your shoulders and see if you can get it to balance. And if you need another chip because you've eaten your prop. Very good. Okay. Who is getting this analogy already? Sometimes we walk around with a chip on our shoulder. Now, I invite you volunteers to eat your chip or give it to a neighbor who would like to eat it, to somebody else up here if you don't want to eat it. But go ahead and have a bite, eat it down, and stay here. Standing firm like Jesus is better than what I just asked them to do. Practically speaking, if we internalize that we are victims or that we are exceptional, it negatively impacts our ability to do all three things on the chart. And God has something better for us to internalize. Big round of applause for our volunteers. Thank you. God has something better for us to internalize. Now, we're going to pretend like the gospel is a piece of fruit. Fruit is something that makes our bodies stronger. Fruit fuels us and reduces our inflammation. And so it is with the gospel. So for anyone here feeling not enough today, this passage says you are loved by Jesus. For anyone here who is struggling with vocation or what you will do or your purpose, this passage says God has called you. God has chosen you. And chosen you with a purpose through the gospel. So that's true for Patty, and that's true for Michaela, and that's true for Ari, and that's true for Jaden. That's true for everyone online and everyone here. This passage even says that God has given us eternal encouragement and hope. So all this good news has already been given to us, and our job is to internalize it. That is how we stand firm. I'll tell you a story about someone from Zion who has been standing firm these last 19 days. For about the last 6 years, this person has been digesting the good news. She was eager to learn about prayer, and so she practiced, she studied. She even memorized scripture so that she could turn those scriptures into prayers. So that when she had two surgeries and her digestive system was not working, and she had barely slept or eaten in days because of the intense pain and nausea, when fears could have been her food, Monica still had something internalized that fed her. The good news Monica had been practicing helped her to stand firm when that looked like being doubled over in pain. It didn't look like the London Guard. It wasn't stationary or passive. It looked like Jesus at the foot of her bed, present with her. God has given us enough power, love, and self-control for these present moments. And God is able to grow fruit of the Spirit in us. Somebody say them with me if you know them. Love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. I love that. That's what standing firm looks like. Humble like a huckleberry, and yet enough antioxidants to prevent disease in the body. God's good news is that we are a new creation. Jesus already brought us into new life, and our role is to internalize it. So we're in the home stretch. I'll share a challenge and one last analogy. First, the challenge for everybody who loves this part. Pick one problem in your life or in the world and decide how you can internalize the good news of Jesus and that problem. What if 20 people here, or 5 people here, did that? Think how it would change this. During the sending song, I invite all the kids who have permission to walk to the fellowship hall and back with me, because we have some chips and some fruit that we're going to take over there for the fellowship meal as a symbol, as we have our fellowship meal, as a reminder of this choice that we have. And it's symbolic, right? Like if we eat some chips, all things in moderation, right? Spiritually, which are we choosing? Are we willing to do the work of internalizing the good news? And here's one reason why it matters. For this last analogy, I invite Mike to stretch out the children's blanket and all the children who are able to come forward and have a seat. Thank you so much. This will be a help. Everybody has a seat, enough room for everybody. Yes, come on, Emma. Now, what is this?
Orange.
An orange. If I squeeze this orange as hard as I can, you already know that juice is gonna come out of it. And you already know that it's not gonna be apple juice, it's not gonna be grape juice, it's gonna be orange juice. And the reason why you know that is because this is an orange, and what's inside of it is orange juice. So you're right. The same is true with us. When somebody comes along and puts pressure on us, when somebody says something mean to us, or if they say that we said something that we didn't really say, like happened to the Apostle Paul, when we feel pressured, what comes out of us is what's inside of us. So we might say, oh, they made me so mad, and that just made me angry, and that's why I was mean or mad, and that's why that came out of it. But the good news is that what God does for us is God puts good on the inside, like the fruit of the Spirit that you all named. God helps us to have good come out. And that's how we stand firm, is when what's inside comes out and it looks like Jesus, like love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, self-control. May it be so more and more.